Welcome to Operation Retirement Readiness, where Amy and Mike, two certified financial planners, talk about how military members can prepare for transition and how veterans can prepare for ultimate retirement. This podcast represents the views of the hosts and any guests. It is for informational purposes only and should not be considered tax, financial, or legal advice. All information is regarded to be from reliable sources. The hosts are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. This podcast is not intended to replace professional advice.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. We're a little bit into the new year at this point, and I think for most, if not everyone, sort of the newness is worn off of everything. And so we're sort of getting to the time of the year where the choices that you make today, determine whether you're still going to the gym or you're still on track with your other goals. So I feel like, you know, even though we're sort of in the, dark time of winter and it's kind of sleepy, this is kind of an important time of year in terms of continuing on with goals or not.
Yeah, completely agree. It's kind of that make or break time, whether you miss a day or two, or, you know, what, depending on what your goal is. If you stumble, you got the choice of, okay, I'm done, or, hey, do I get back on the horse and just keep going? So yeah, critical time to make sure whatever resolutions you had are still in place at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So Mike, what are we going to talk about today?
The topic today is talking about debt and how do you, manage that? How do you use debt appropriately? And, you know, how do you get out of debt if you're, have more than you think you should?
This is a great time to be talking about this. Statistics are really boring, but I found, some notable statistics. The New York Federal Reserve just recently published a report that U.S. households are carrying $17.29 trillion in debt. And trillion is a really hard number to comprehend. So if we think about what $1 million is, I mean, even for a lot of people, $1 million is just a huge number. But if you think about what $1 million in your 401k might mean, or in your thrift savings plan might mean, or if you think about what $1 million home looks like in your area, you know, take that and multiply it by another million, and that's a trillion. That's how big this number is. And a lot of that debt is mortgage debt, more than half of it, which is, collateralized by your house, which presumably will increase in value over time. And it gives you a place to live, so it's useful. But of that 17.29 trillion, over $1 trillion is just credit card debt. So just straight up consumer debt. Another 1.6 trillion is auto loan debt. So cars, which, are an asset, they get you where you need to go, but they lose value over time. And then another 1.6 trillion is student loan debt. So these are just huge numbers for Americans. Even if you break it down in an average per American, it's a lot of money. And some American families are facing financial disaster as a result of their debt load. So I feel like this is a really important topic to dig into today.
Yeah, it definitely is. And the numbers are staggering when you just think of them, kind of abstract. So it's often useful to look at them, okay, compared to either inflation or size of the overall economy and, potentially how fast they're changing. You look at student loan debt, and that's just going up and up and up and up. When you talk about the credit card debt, it just crossed $1 trillion, I think, for the first time. But when you kind of look at it in the overall scope of the economy, or, how much that's grown over the past few years, it's trending higher, but it's not, out of control type thing. And auto loans are interesting because, autos are getting more expensive. and people are financing them for longer, but we're also seeing, you know, payments that are, you know, the number of payments that are over $1,000 a month for new cars is just going up. And again, useful to think about in terms of inflation and how that all works together. But, you know, you can get behind and you can have issues if you're not managing your debt correctly.
Yeah. And I mean, you made a really good point in terms of, you know, we're talking about overall balances, but you made the point of sort of what payments are and things like that. So it's ends up translating into that payment translates into, you know, sort of a cash flow that's coming in that you don't get to choose what happens with it. You've already sort of spent that money. But before we get into that or go any further, I think it's really important for people to understand the kinds of debt that are out there. So, you know, when I was running through those boring statistics, I talked about mortgages and car loans. So those are loans that are backed by an asset, so collateral loans. And then there's other kinds of loans like revolving credit. Mike, can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, categorizing debt and what each category sort of the characteristics in each category?
Yeah, there's kind of two primary ways that debt gets broken down. And you kind of hit on the, you know, one is secured, which is the collateral you were talking about, where there's some asset that if you didn't pay, the lender could go and take. And that could be a car, that could be the house. All of those types of things fall into secured debt. The other is unsecured. That's your credit card. That's a student loan where there is no asset that they can come and take. You've already taken the trip. You know, they don't really want your TV type thing. So those are kind of two primary ways to think about it. And then the other two are whether it's installment credit or whether it's revolving credit. So installment credit is you borrow a big lump sum, say for the mortgage, for the car, and then you have fixed payments over a set amount of time. Now the actual payment could change because you may have a variable rate, but you know, you're set up to pay over 30 years or 15 years for a mortgage or, you know, 5 or 6 years for a car. And then revolving credit is the you know, credit card says you can borrow up to $10,000. And if you borrow $8,000, you still have $2,000 that you could, you know, buy something else. But if you say, hey, I'm going to pay this off and you get down to $2,000, you can go and reborrow more of that. So it's just kind of in and out. You're just making payments based on how much you owe at that time. And those payments will change every month. And if you get down to zero and you aren't using the credit, typically there's no payment due at that point for revolving credit. And again, that's typical of credit cards are the primary example of your revolving type credit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in addition to sort of the factual ways to characterize debt, I think it might also be useful to talk about, you know, this philosophical ways of classifying debt, which, you know, there's for as many people as there are in our country, that is probably how many philosophies there are around debt. But probably one of the most common sort of philosophical ways to categorize debt is sort of, you know, this idea of useful debt or leverage that can help you enhance the use of your money. So the things that might get categorized that way are things like a mortgage for your primary home. So like I said before, typically your home will increase in value over a period of time. So even if you buy at the top of a bubble, if you end up staying in the home, there's a very good chance that you end up, you know, walking away with more money. So if you bought it for $300,000, there's a very good chance if you've kept it for 30 years that it will be worth more than $300,000, maybe even in excess of inflation over that period of time. But if nothing else, you've gained a place to live. Your mortgage payment's locked in. It's not like a rent payment that might go up every year. So that can sort of be perceived as good debt or leverage that helps you make more use of your money. Student loans are sometimes categorized that way as well. So you spend money to go to college in order to be more educated and get, you know, have a chance at having a higher income job. Again, different philosophies around each of sort of those examples. But then the other, so there's leverage or useful debt, and then there's sort of what people might call bad debt or debt that doesn't give you leverage per se. And that's things like, you know, oftentimes credit cards are lumped in here because you can spend money that you don't have today, but you're basically signing yourself up for having to pay later. So there's a ton of different kinds of, and often revolving credit is categorized in this way. But it's really important for you to identify what you feel are the philosophical differences between kinds of debt, because sometimes you're going to need to take on debt. Most people don't have $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to just go buy a house. And if you did, does it even make sense to do that? Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it makes more sense to take the debt. But it's just important for you to understand that there are philosophical differences, and you need to be really clear about what your philosophy on debt is. And as you consider, you know, how you want to approach your debt and what makes you feel worse than other parts of your debt. So if you just have a mortgage, maybe you don't like it. Maybe it makes you uncomfortable to just have a mortgage. But if you have a mortgage and several credit cards and an auto loan, what are the debts that have you most concerned? So I just think that, you know, it's a very long-winded way of saying that, you know, philosophy matters and how you feel about things matter.
Yeah, no, those are all great points. And, you know, one of the other pieces is just looking at your overall debt to income ratio and understanding that and how that affects credit scores and, you know, a myriad of other things. But if your debts climb too high, even if they're useful, typically you're going to have a harder time borrowing, or you're future loans and things are going to be at higher rates because, you know, you're viewed as more of a credit risk, and a bank or a lending agency isn't going to be wanting to give you even more money. So, understanding useful, bad debt, and, you know, just understanding and managing it and having a plan is incredibly important for any kind of debt discussion.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because, again, you know, it is unlikely that you're going to be able to pay for every single thing in cash. So at some point you will need debt for some reason, one reason or another. And if you can come to the table with a great credit score and a great credit history, then you can get much more favorable terms, which can make a huge difference over the long term. And I think that sort of like launches into, you know, so far we've talked about things in, you know, very general nature. All of our comments can apply to anybody. But this is a show about, you know, retirement and preparing for retirement. And I think what's really important about, you know, debt management as you get ready to head into retirement is to keep in mind that everything, as you start to prepare for your transition, whether it's a military transition to the private sector, full retirement, everything feels a lot more urgent and emotions become very difficult to manage. So the sooner you can get a handle on your debt and have a plan for reducing your debt to a manageable level as you head into retirement, the more smooth of a transition you'll have heading into retirement. What are your thoughts around that, Mike?
Yeah, I totally agree, especially when you're talking ultimate retirement, having that handle on the debt, because again, if you're going to actually stop working, you know, what what money do you have coming in that's going to be able to pay off those debts? And that all needs to be factored in. So if you're, you know, it's best to handle that well before you retire. Now, you know, if you have a mortgage because you need a place to live because you just relocated for retirement, but you have a pension or you have some other options, Social Security for getting money. But again, looking at that kind of debt to income ratio of, do you have enough money coming in that can service all the debt as you get into retirement? And for military retirement, it's having optionality. I mean, if you are, you know, have excessive debt, it can limit your options for taking the job you really want versus, you know, having to take the job because you've got to make those payments for things that, you know, you've already bought. So, yeah, it's incredibly important as you look at retirement in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, back to options, you know, having money available to you, whether it's because you saved or it's because you have full use of all your cash flow versus some or a lot of it being earmarked for expenses that already exist for you, is a huge deal. So as people start to get a handle on their debt, or want to start to get a handle on their debt as they sort of enter the retirement red zone, that 5 to 10 years prior to retirement, what are some ways that people can sort of approach debt reduction or debt management?
Yeah, there's definitely a bunch of different thoughts on this that people do and have used successfully. What's the highest rate I'm paying? You know, right now, credit card debt is, you know, close to, if not over 20% annual interest rates compared to, you may have a mortgage locked in for, you know, 3.5%. And even if you're borrowing today, it's 7 or 8%. But compared to 20%, that's a lot lower. So you'd want to, you know, order all your debts by how much you are paying in interest and just attack those that have the highest interest rates and then slowly work through that list. The one key piece is don't go back and add more debt unless you're talking about, okay, maybe I'm going to refinance, I'm going to take a loan or a, you know, credit card has a teaser rate for a year, and I'm really sure I can pay off all of this if I move it to the 0% card and, you know, I'm going to be diligent, pay it off. But what you don't want to do is build up more debt back on that old credit card after you paid it off. So that's one, highest to lowest by the rate. Another one is called the debt snowball method, where you pick the smallest amount you owe, could be a credit card or just a one-off, you know, store credit card, and maybe get a couple $100 on there and you just knock that one out. So then you're done paying that off, and then you can roll the payments over to the next highest balance that you owe. And so you keep doing that to, just kind of get some mental wins, I guess, where you're clearing some debts that you have and, you know, taking those down one at a time, and it can and go faster, you know, and in the mind, you like having that win and you move on the next. But in those cases, maybe you're not worried about which is the highest rate. You're just, you know, trying to clear, you know, a whole account out as quickly as possible. So I personally favor the, you know, looking at the rates, especially if you have high interest rate debts, and just knocking those out. Because when you look at how much money you're sending the bank and the credit card companies in interest, getting that down and then being able to apply all of that to interest and principal of lower amounts, you're going to make faster progress in my mind. So that's what I favor. How about you?
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned before just how emotional things can get. And in my experience, clients get very emotional around debt. And so I actually favor a blend of the first two that you mentioned. So you know, there's no doubt that the highest to lowest rate, you know, paying off the highest rate debt first makes the most sense from a number standpoint. I can't think of a time where that wouldn't be true. There could be times, but for the most part, that's gonna be the least amount of money that you're gonna pay. Having said that, depending on where a client is when, you know, we start talking about debt, if they need a win, then we're just gonna pay off whatever is the smallest first because they get a win. And that makes them feel a little bit better about themselves so that then we can get to the work of making sure that, you know, they're not spending new money, like we're not taking on new debt. And then we can start working on highest to lowest rate. And there might be times when, you know, they're starting to get down, you know, just like we've been talking about with the New Year's resolutions, we're kind of at that time of the year where it's hard to, it's not new anymore. The excitement's worn off. The grind of doing whatever it is that you said that you were going to do is a grind. And so sometimes you just need an extra sort of emotional boost. And so then I will go back and say, okay, well, let's just get this one handled because now they get a new emotional boost. Cause it, you know, we can't ignore the emotions around money. There's the number side of money and the emotion side of money. And I just think that it, particularly for debt management, the emotions are a big deal.
Yeah, they definitely are. And kind of one other question, how do you balance the saving versus paying down debt side of things?
Yeah. Last week we talked, or the last podcast, we talked about savings. And pretty soon we'll talk about budgeting and trying to get a balance between all of it. But you know, this is another hard thing. I am an advocate of putting some minimal form of an emergency fund together. And that might be, you know, that might be your car insurance deductible. So whether it's $500, $1,000 in the bank in case something happens, or it might be as much as $5,000 if you got a little bit more going on. So I am in favor of having some basic emergency fund, not fully funded, but basic emergency fund, to try and prevent the new debt. And it sort of mentally helps people too. And it starts to train them that this is money that you can never touch, because at some point we do want a fully funded emergency fund. And we do want clients to sort of be trained that that's not money that's for use. That's, you know, it might be $30,000, $40,000 just sitting there. That's not for a new car. That is your emergency fund, and new cars are not emergencies. So that's sort of how I approach it. How about you?
Yeah, similar. I try to, again, I get back to the credit card, but looking at the percentage that they are charging and what you're going to be making in even a high yield savings account right now, or in the, even if you, you know, put it in the market, you're probably not gonna, you know, return that even if you catch that hot lucky stock. I'm in favor of, hey, let's get after the debt. You know, maybe, like you said, having that emergency fund, but let's divert savings to where we know we've got a fixed rate of return, and let's knock out that debt. Even if it means, you know, slowing down savings or pausing savings, before we, start that up again. So.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, well, that's great. Anything else, or what are kind of the key takeaways that we want to leave folks today, Amy?
I think one of the key points that you had is critical to the discussion. We focus very much on sort of what debt is and the kinds and debt management and that kind of stuff. But first and foremost, the first key takeaway is you have to reduce spending. You can't take on new debt while you're trying to pay down debt. So it doesn't matter how great your debt management plan is. It doesn't matter which version of the, you know, highest to lowest rate or debt snowball you picked. Unless you reduce expenses to less than your income, you're never going to make progress with your debt management plan. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, the fact that debt can have a real impact on your ability to retire successfully. So getting a plan in place, preferably before you hit that retirement red zone, the 5 to 10 years before retirement, but certainly as early in that red zone as possible, having a debt management plan to get debt down to a manageable level in retirement. And then last, I think it's really important to keep in mind that debt is emotional. So if you're experiencing, you know, sleeplessness at night, that's the emotions of, you know, that are linked to debt, and controlling your emotions throughout the debt management process is at least as important as the, you know, logistical financial process of getting out of debt. So if you need to hire somebody, whether it's a financial coach or you need an accountability partner, that you're comfortable talking about money with, or an actual financial planner, even though you're dealing with debt, it could still make a lot of sense for you to bring somebody on board to help you control your emotions and put together a good plan that you can stick to. Anything else, Mike, that you think counts as a key point here?
No, I think you hit the main takeaways. I think next time we're going to, as you alluded to, probably talk budget. So again, not a fan, but we'll get into that next episode.
That sounds good, Mike. I look forward to it. I do like budgets, but I know they're not popular.
To get transcripts, show notes, or more information, go to operationretirementreadiness.com. Have a question or topic for the podcast? Send it to info@operationretirementreadiness.com. Find out more about Amy and Mike at their websites. Mike is the founder of Next Mission Financial Planning, LLC. He retired from the U.S. Air Force and has worked in the financial services sector since 2021. He is a certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant, and a certified college financial consultant. You can find out more about Mike at nextmissionfinancialplanning.com. Amy is the founder of Instar Financial Planning, LLC. She is retired from the U.S. Army and has worked in the financial services sector since 2019. She's a certified financial planner, a chartered federal employee benefits counselor, and a chartered retirement planning counselor. You can find out more about Amy at instarfp.com.